Hey, and welcome to Wednesday's episode of the Daily Bible Podcast.
Man, I miss our intro bumper. I don't care what anybody says. I liked it. They're wrong. I'm right. Vote for me. Let's make America great again.
Bring the bumper back again.
Bring the bumper back. Let's build the bumper.
Build the bumper. Build it back better.
Build? No. You're on the other side now.
That's the wrong side.
That's the wrong one. Yeah. That's Bidenomics or something. Yeah,
How's that going?
That's a soft spot. Yeah, it's not going. Okay. I keep on seeing videos of people going to the store to buy like 2 dozen eggs, and it shows the cash register ringing up like $7,000.
Yeah. Dude, I'm continually updating my grocery spreadsheet and going, we need to budget more.
Yeah, dude, I have felt that. And I'm like, we're spending so much here. How is this even, how do you eat all this food?
Right.
Where's it all going?
Right. And the scary thing is I've got 4 boys at home. Only one of them is in high school so far.
Oh, dude, they're going to eat you out of a house.
Yeah.
I remember what I used to eat in high school, and I could put it down like the best of them.
Yeah.
Could you?
I don't know. I never was really a big like pound the food kind of a guy, but.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I know it's shocking based on my sheer size and volume.
Yeah. Your massive volume and your evident muscle liberty.
But my oldest does. Dude, he does. I don't know, man. It's crazy. And then on top of that, he's about to turn, well, he's 15. So we've got driver's insurance for him coming up.
Dude.
But when Luke and the twins turned 16, a year apart from each other, and I've got those 3 knuckleheads driving a car and I'm going to have to pay for their insurance.
Yep.
That's it. It's over.
You can't afford to be a pastor anymore at that point.
Nope. You should. Probably not.
You'd be a great car salesman. I could see you do that.
Hey, you should drive this car.
You would sell high-end luxury cars. That's your market right there. You'd be wearing your swanky, cool like tech gadgets and you would be walking them through all the cool tech gadgets on the vehicles.
Sweater vest.
With the sweater vest for sure. I mean, obviously, it's not complete until you have that.
You'll notice I haven't really worn the, and by the way, everybody listening, Pastor Rod calls a cardigan a sweater vest.
You know what? In full disclosure, I'm not always clear of the differences. I think they're probably in the same ballpark.
No, one has sleeves, one does not.
Okay, but they're in the same ballpark, right? So if I were to confuse a second baseman with a first baseman with the guy that catches balls at the second base, shortstop, thank you. Thank you, Brain, not Pastor PJ. If I were to confuse those people, you'd be like,
hold on. The guy that catches balls at second base, the shorts. Okay.
Well, So if I were to confuse that, you would understand. Oh, okay. Not too far apart.
Yes. If the shortstop didn't have arms, then yes, he would be the same as the second baseman.
Okay.
It'd be the exact same thing as a cardigan and a sweater vest.
That's kind of the idea.
Okay. Well,
that's the kind of the
idea. If you find a shortstop with no arms.
No, I'm not saying
it's
no arms.
The same thing.
You added the no arms part. I'm saying the confusion makes sense. All I'm saying.
I disagree, but whatever. We're not here to talk about that.
I'm not fashion forward anyway, obviously.
Talking about confusion, though, and chaos, man, this weekend, and I mentioned it in the sermon on Sunday, just briefly kind of bounced off it, well, at least beforehand during our scripture reading and everything, but the attack on Israel, man, that was crazy. I got a text from somebody saying, hey, you know, Iran just launched an attack against Israel, and we turned on the news kind of after that and watched it the rest of the afternoon and everything, and it was startling.
Yeah, I saw an update on my Facebook from Pastor Jack Hibbs, and he was alarmed. He was of course he was. He was doing a live video and talking to people, saying, "Oh, this is a bad situation. My red alert app is going off," which is an app, I guess Israel has to notify citizens that the Iron Dome is in operation, that something's happening that's causing it to go off. So I thought that was pretty good. I downloaded that just to know what's going on. So yeah, it's scary. And the first thought I had, which I was not alone because I went and checked the X. First thought I had was World War III is here. Here we go. We're starting it. And that was what a lot of people thought on X.com too, which is previously called Twitter.
Yeah. And one of the things I did, I jumped on Facebook and I started messaging my friend who's in Israel. He lives in Bethlehem, right on the border of Palestine controlled area and Israelite controlled area. And so I messaged him and said, hey, how are things going? And he texted back and said, hey, yeah, it's nerve wracking. We're all watching the news and waiting to see what's going to happen here. And he's a tour guide there in Israel. And when we were out there touring, there were rockets being fired from Palestine that the Iron Dome was intercepting. And he was like, yeah, that's no big deal. It happens all the time. So when he was a little unnerved by this, I could tell, man, this is a big deal. But then he posted on Facebook on Sunday. He said the swift turn to return to normalcy within just a few hours of recent events is truly remarkable. Today, there's a sense of tranquility in the air, airports, offices, shops bustling as usual. It seems like the disruption of yesterday was momentary, and now everything is back to its vibrant state. feels like an isolated incident that has swiftly passed, bringing reassurance that there are no indications of further disturbances on the horizon.
Oh, wow. So they're done.
That's from somebody on the ground in Israel thinking that's kind of what it feels like right now. It seems like everything's back to status quo.
Well, that might be true at the civilian level for now, but no doubt at the political level, there are pawns being moved and there's positioning. Yeah. And that's, I guess that's kind of what was leaving everybody on pins and needles. What's next? And what's the political fallout? What's it look like at a national level? How's America going to respond?
Right.
And that's going to be important.
Right.
I think Dr. Mueller talked about this in his briefing Friday, Monday. I don't remember when, but at some point recently.
Yeah, Monday.
And I think that's an important feature of our politics, our political system, is the support of Israel. We both need each other. And apart from that, it's going to be tenuous.
Yeah. Yeah, I found it interesting to watch the response of some of the other Muslim nations in that area. They kind of came to the defense of Israel, which I was shocked by. I mean, Jordan was shooting some of these drones down out of the sky, and some of the other nations seem to have helped at least with some intelligence and some other things.
Now,
the U.S. planes were obviously doing the majority of the heavy lifting there alongside of Israel with making sure that they were blowing these drones out of the air before they could do any real damage. But it nerve-wracking. And if you're out there, Christian, wondering, okay, what do we need to do on this? Do we need to be afraid? No, the response is live ready for the return of Christ, just like you were before any of this happened, just like you were before any of this took place. You're going to find plenty of people that are going to be out there on the Twitterverse or YouTube X-verse. Videos or anything else that are going to tell you, here comes the end of the world, and look, we need to abide by the words of Christ. Nobody knows the day or hour except for the Father. But we also need to abide by the words of Christ when he says, be ready. We need to be like those that were ready for his return, because he is going to come back at some point. And he says, blessed is the one whom the master finds doing the work they're supposed to do when he returns. So that's what we need to do. We don't need to panic. We don't need to fear. We don't need to worry about, do we need to build bunkers in our backyard? We don't need to do any of that. Right now, we need to focus on the same thing that you were focusing on last Monday, which is God's called you to be faithful as a believer and a follower of Jesus, and that's what we need to do. And so one foot in front of the other, and we continue to do that.
That's right. Don't get shook up. This is going to happen. Jesus promised it. Wars and rumors of wars are going to occur before he comes, but these are just the birth pains.
Right. Well, let's jump into 1 Samuel 25 through 27. So the death of Samuel happens, and that's about as much as we're given in the Bible about it. 1 Samuel 25:1. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah.
You'd expect a little more.
You would. And yet this is all we have.
That's all you get.
And it you know, we've heard from Samuel a couple times now, himself appealing to the integrity of his ministry as judge there in Israel, and so perhaps that was sufficient. There didn't need to be anything else there recorded for us, but here's his death in 1 Samuel 25:1. And then the narrative kind of moves on, and the narrative moves on and focuses on David, and appropriately so, because David is the focal point. David is really the main storyline of really 1 and 2 Samuel here. And so that's the focal point here as we continue on. And there's a story of David and his men on the run, and they encounter a man named Nabal. Now we're going to get into this man Nabal, but David and his men, as they're out in the wilderness of Maon here, they are helping, and they're helping these shepherds, and they're making sure that they're protecting them against the raids from enemies or from other people that might want to come in and steal their flock and disrupt things. And so David and his mighty men are out there, and they're not just on the run, but they're also caring for the people of the land, which shows David's shepherding heart, his kingly heart, as he's even on the run here before he's even officially on the throne as the king of Israel. So the narrative continues that it happened to be the time of the shearing of the sheep. And we don't shear our sheep because we don't have any sheep, but this would have been a time of great celebration and joy, and there would have been much feasting. And so there would have been a lot of food available and readily available. And this was known in the area. So David sends some of his men to this man, Nabal, and they had been protecting Nabal's shepherds. And they make a request to Nabal. They say, hey, can we have some food? Because we've been out.
We want a party.
Yeah, we want to be part of this. Remember, hospitality was a huge part of the culture at this time as well, beyond just the fact that they had been doing some work for Nabal. And short story, Nabal refuses, and David gets angry at this, really angry at this. David's ready to kill him.
Like 0 to 60 in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
Which is so surprising given his response to Saul. you get such a different response in the way that he interacts with Saul. And yet with this guy, it's like, man, it doesn't take a whole lot to get him upset. I think it's really funny. It's comical in verse 9. When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited. It's like, was there just a pregnant pause in there? Like, okay, what are you going to do, buddy?
Right.
And then he's like, who is David? Who is this guy? Who is the son of Jesse? Come on, everybody's running away from their slaves, their servants, their masters these days. I don't know David. I don't know you. Get off my property.
Right.
One of those things. I thought that was funny. I don't know if I was meant to see comedy there, but I saw it nonetheless. I enjoyed it.
When you get to heaven,
I'm gonna ask.
You can't ask Nabal, but you can ask others.
He's probably not laughing at that.
I don't think so. Yeah. So they report to David, and David's response, every man strap on a sword, let's go. We're going after this guy. This is wrong. And I don't know if it's a sense of injustice. I don't know if it's a sense of just prideful arrogance on David's part. I think his response is different because this man's not the Lord's anointed. And so, you know, he's...
Yeah. On top of that, though, it seems like Abigail does suggest to him, at minimum, that he was about to do something wrong.
Right.
So it seems like this is an impetuous move on his part. To do something that, even though he's angry, perhaps there's a part of it that's righteous. Certainly, what he's about to do is not a righteous response.
Right. And you mentioned Abigail. We pick her up in verses 13 through 31. This is the wife of Nabal, and she finds out what's going to happen here and hears about it, and she gathers up food and provisions, and she goes out to stop David and his men, and she gets off, her ride, and she falls down in front of David, and she implores David, hey, please don't. Basically, don't give my husband what he deserves. And to your point, she says, don't do this thing, because if you do this thing, then you will have shed innocent blood or shed blood wrongfully, at least. And that will come back upon you at a latter time. And then David affirms this when he praises Abigail afterwards and says, you kept my hand from doing something that I would have regretted, that I shouldn't have done this. This was wrong. And so Abigail is praised.
She's commended.
She's commended. Right. Yeah. Exactly. She's the opposite of her husband. Nabal, by the way, his name in Hebrew means fool. And here you have Abigail, who demonstrates great wisdom in contrast to her husband.
Now, why would his parents do that to him?
I don't know.
Like, why would, I don't know, man. I don't know either. That's unfortunate. And sadly, he lives up to his name, which could suggest the importance of someone's name. I don't subscribe to mysticism by any stretch of the imagination, but there is something about a name and what it suggests to a person. I want to point out one small thing here. Verse 22 in chapter 25, it said, David's response is, God do so to the enemies of David and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to Nabal. That is a vow. That's language of vow. And he's making a vow to God to say, destroy me if I don't destroy him.
Right.
And then Abigail steps in and says, hold on, partner, put your guns away. Let's hash this out like men, so to speak. And David acknowledges this. And I think that's a vow. That's an example of a vow that he should not fulfill. It's better to sin by breaking the vow than to sin by fulfilling the vow. This is another situation where it's kind of like what we saw with Jephthah.
Right. And yet the difference is, I think of that, again, the thing I struggle with, not to rehash Jephthah, but that the text says, and he went through with it.
Right.
Here, David clearly doesn't go through with it.
And that's a good thing, is what I'm saying.
Right. And fair. With Jephthah, it's ambiguous enough, to your point that we talked about in that passage, either she remained a perpetual virgin the rest of her life, or he sacrificed her. I think his going through with it was wrong either way. I do think he had the out because of, to your point, that wasn't a good vow for him to vow.
Agreed.
But I think the difference there is, it said, and he fulfilled it. He went through with, the vow.
Yeah, it seems like he did.
Yeah.
Seems like he did, for sure.
So Abigail intervenes. David praises Abigail. And then what happens is God takes vengeance upon Nabal on behalf of David. And Nabal dies. And he dies. And Abigail, being left a widow, becomes David's wife. And David moves quickly. Not the first time David moves quickly, except at least this time he waited until the guy died before he was like, hey, I like your wife.
That's fair. Verse 43, poor Ahinoam.
Right.
She just gets a little bit of dink.
Right.
Here's Abigail. She's amazing. And there's Ahinoam.
Right. Which we don't know when he took Ahinoam as his wife at this point. It was around the same time, but I don't know that it was concurrent with him taking Abigail. And again,
seems
this,
like it.
Yeah. This is not condoning polygamy. This is not a good thing that David is doing here. He's going to take Bathsheba as his wife eventually. This is not a good thing that is happening in David's life.
And like seven others, or five others, I believe.
Yeah. And women for David, much like his son, are going to be a trap for him. They're going to be a weakness, something that trips him up massively. And so, and he had Michal, by the way, as well.
He had her. Now she's gone because Saul gives her away.
For a minute.
Yeah, for a minute. That's true.
But, so this is not somehow us to be like, well, look, the Bible talks about polygamy, so this is clearly an okay thing. But the lesson in here is David has to trust the Lord to take matters into his own hand. He has to trust the Lord to avenge. And that's something that here I think is right and commendable. Later on, we're going to get into the story of Amnon and Tamar. And I think there we find I'm going to argue when we get there, a weakness of David. I think he is too passive in that regard. But we'll get there when we get there. Yep. Well, chapter 26, then you have a situation where the Ziphites come to Saul saying, hey, David's with us. People are just kind of despicable all over the place here. And David is having to look over his shoulder left and right. And I think that's part of the point of all of this is David was really in an insecure position as he was on the run. But he's presented with another opportunity to kill Saul. He comes upon Saul's camp and they arise and him and his armor bearer or him and his right-hand man, they sneak down into Saul's camp and there's Saul asleep. And David has every opportunity to take things into his own hand and to kill Saul. And yet again, he refuses to do so. He refuses to raise his hand against the Lord's anointed. Abishai is the guy that David goes down with. And I love when Abishai looks at David and says, let me at him. One stroke of the spear, I will not strike him twice. It's going to be done. Just let me do one stroke and it's over.
I'll put my silencer on my knife.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
no.
Abishai is zealous for this opportunity. David says, no, we're not going to do this. And instead they take the water jug and the spear and they retreat. And then David calls out to Saul again and says, hey, Saul. And they call out to Saul's general Abner. And they say, hey, what kind of man are you that you allowed us to be right there and for us to almost kill Saul? And again, in this context, Saul feigns this repentance and says, you know, I'm so sorry. Return, my son. I will no longer do you any harm. Verse 21, David says, hey, why don't you come get your spear and your water jug? But as for your invitation to return, I think I'll pass on this. And then Saul says to David in verse 25, blessed be you, my son, David, you will do many things and succeed in them. So David went his way and Saul returned to his place. And that's kind of the end of chapter 26 there.
So this is an interesting dichotomy, especially on the heels of the last chapter, David's response to Nabal versus his response to Saul. One thing I think I see in David's response is a deep trust in God's providence. It's like, okay, God's going to put him here and he's clearly at least presenting the opportunity to David. Look, you have the potential to bring salvation by your own hand, which is exactly what he was tempted to do in chapter 25. But here he decides not to. And I think part of that is a great respect for God's leadership. It could, like it or not, Saul is God's leadership. And perhaps there's a small parallel, even though it is going to be quite small, to God's leadership in the New Testament. It's similar in the concept of, in the sense of saying, look, if you have a charge to bring against an elder, make sure there's at least two witnesses and do so in a way that's humble and respectful, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Here, David's unwilling to lay a finger on him because it's like, okay, who can put out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless, he says in verse 9. And I think that's just, again, a sense of respect for God's leadership and God's individual leader. This is God's problem. He's going to deal with him.
Yeah, and then as the chapter turns the page, you see David kind of in a negative light because David says in his heart, now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me that I should escape to the hand of the Philistines, the land of the Philistines. And so he goes from kind of a high watermark of trusting the Lord's timing to a low point of saying, man, Saul's going to kill me.
Fascinating.
And I need to run to the Philistines. And in doing that, he puts himself and his men in a position that's going to jeopardize their lives. From the very outset, the Philistines are not happy that they're there. But eventually the king kind of says, okay, well, maybe we can utilize this. He seems to be at odds with his own people. So let's see what will happen. But David jeopardizes his men and also eventually puts himself in a position, as we're going to see later in the book, where he's going to have to potentially fight against his own people, against the people of God, against the people that God has anointed him king over. And so this is not a good thing that David does here in 1 Samuel chapter 27, running to the Philistines. He inserts him and his men into Philistine country, settling there in Ziklag. And from there he begins to do some work for the Lord by launching raiding parties and defeating Israel's enemies. Meanwhile, the Philistines think that he's doing work for them, but really he's still working for Israel. But this is just not a good season, and it's going to result in even worse things before it gets better as the story unfolds.
What's interesting about this particular season of David's life is that he's also composing some of the best poetry and songs that you've ever read. I mean, some of our favorite songs, and we're going to cover some of them tomorrow, and in the days following, we're going to read some of the things that David wrote during the season. And it's amazing how profoundly impactful those songs were, and still are. And I think it shows something about the nature of suffering in the life of a believer. Now, granted, David's struggling here in chapter 27. He's not in a good place. He's on his heels. He's on the defensive, and he's looking for shelter with the king of Gath, the Philistines. But in the season, some of the things that God is doing in him is causing him to rejoice and to seek and to trust and to compose some of the best literature we still have access to. So even though there's a sharp edge to suffering, there's also the sense that sharp edge is like a surgical knife. God is not inflicting pain in order to wound, but pain in order to heal. And that's what's happening in David's heart. Now, this is really, I think, the high point of David's career. I mean, maybe we're cresting the high point. He hasn't gotten there yet. But the second half of his kingly life, after he's installed and secure, that's when things get pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
It's this season, when he's running, when he's weak, when he's frail, that you see him be his strongest.
Yeah.
And that's what 2 Corinthians 12 says. And we ought to think of the same in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, keep reading your Bibles and join with us as we continue to look at the life of David, including the Psalms tomorrow.
We look forward to it. See you then.
Bye. Hey, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Daily Bible Podcast. We hope and pray this has been a blessing to you and your time in the Word. If it has, if you would subscribe to this podcast, leave a like, leave a comment, and share it with some friends and family, that would be awesome. If you need more information about Compass Bible Church here in North Texas, you can go to compassntx.org. Again, that's compassntx.org. And we'll be back with you tomorrow for another episode of the Daily Bible Podcast.